probable that he knew that his name upon the coast was such that outraged humanity would, against all odds, have thrown themselves upon him, but never once did he show his face in the settlement. When his ship was laid up, he would leave her under the charge of Ned Galloway, her New England quartermaster, and would take long voyages in his boat, sometimes, it was said, for the purposes of burying his share of the plunder, and sometimes to shoot the wild oxen of Hispaniola, which, when dressed and barbecued, provide provisions for his next voyage. In the latter case, the bark would come round to some prearranged spot to pick him up and take on board what he had shot. There had always been a hope in the islands that Sharkey might be taking on one of those occasions, and at last there came news to Kingston, which seemed to justify an attempt upon him. It was brought by an elderly logwood cutter, who had fallen into the pirate's hands, and in some freak drunken benevolence, had been allowed to get away with nothing worse than a slit nose and a drubbing. His account was recent and definite. The Happy Delivery was careening at Torbeck on the southwest of Hispaniola. Sharkey, with four men, was buccaneering on the outlying islands of La Vache. The blood of 100 murdered crews was calling out for vengeance, and now at last it seems as if it might not call in vain. Sir Edward Compton, the high-nosed, red-faced governor, sitting in solemn conclave with the commandant and the head of the council, was sorely puzzled in his mind as to how he should use his chance. There was no man of war nearer than Jamestown, and she was a clumsy old flyboat, which could neither overhaul the pirate on the seas, nor reach her in a shallow inlet. There were forts and artillerymen both at Kingston and Port Royal, but no soldiers available for an expedition. A private venture might be fitted out, and there were many who had a blood feud with Sharkey, but what could a private venture do? The pirates were numerous and desperate. As to taking Sharkey and his four companions, that, of course, would be easier if they can get at them. But how were they to get at them on a large, well-wooded island like La Vache, full of wild hills and impenetrable jungles? A reward was offered to anyone who could find a solution, and that brought a man to the front who had a singular plan and was himself prepared to carry it out. Stephen Craddock had been that most formidable person, the Puritan gone wrong. Sprung from a decent Salem family, his ill-doing seemed to be a recoil from the austerity of their religion, and he brought to vice all the physical strength and energy with which the virtues of his ancestors had endowed him. He was ingenious, fearless, and exceedingly tenacious of purpose, so that when he was still young, his name became notorious upon the American coast. He was the same Craddock who was tried for his life in Virginia for the slaying of the Seminole chief, and, though he escaped, it was well known that he had corrupted the witness and bribed the judge. Afterwards, as a slaver, and even, as it was hinted, as a pirate, he had left an evil name behind him in the blight of Benin. Finally, he had returned to Jamaica with a considerable fortune, and had settled down to a life of somber dissipation. This was the man, gaunt, austere, and dangerous, who now waited upon the governor with a plan for the extirpation of Sharkey.